Okay. Okay, hi everybody. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 14. And we have been discussing great sources of energy which make their way to our solar system and into our planet. These sources of energy are so high that the human being can no more register them in a conscious way than a cell within our little finger can register a high moment of meditation. This is what Master DK is telling us. And now we're going on here. Let's see, what page are we on? Late 20-something, I suspect. Oh yeah, page 30. Okay. So he says it's not really profitable to speculate about these great sources of energy and to follow obscure trails. Perhaps once the Antikoron is built and the third initiation is taken, something of their nature can be dimly felt. We are told that Sirius is felt at the third initiation. All right, so we go on. It might be useful here to comment in a wide and general way and with many necessary reservations upon the broad sweep of some of these responses which the human kingdom can make to some of these energies and which man at a certain level of development can also make. Undeveloped humanity is primarily conditioned in its life and circumstances by the influence of the lesser zodiac, and thus by the position of the planets in the 12 houses. So in a way, he seems to be calling the 12 houses the lesser zodiac. And the planets govern within this zodiac and condition the elemental vehicles of the human being, physical, etheric, astral, and lower mental. Okay, so this is the undeveloped human being conditioned by the planets, and we remember that the planets, in a broad and general way, with respect to the influences impacting our solar system, represent the third aspect of divinity, and undeveloped man represents also the third aspect of divinity. All right. Average intelligent humanity and those nearing the path of discipleship and upon the probationary path respond consciously to the planets affecting their personalities. So we see the planets are still in play, even for the intelligent and those upon the path of probation and path of discipleship. The sun sign, average intelligent humanity, and those nearing the probationary path and discipleship path, respond to the sun sign as indicating the life trends which are already established and which constitute the line of least resistance, especially the conscious line of least resistance. The conscious line of least resistance. There is a line of least resistance which is followed in an unconscious manner, such that we may not even know that we are responding in such ways. That's indicated by the moon. So remember that according to the Tibetan, the life proceeds in the same sign in the next incarnation as the sign of departure or death in the previous incarnation. So we can indeed talk about trends and continuities, trends which are already established, and the sun sign gives, in that respect, the thread of continuity of that which is being built up in the personality in a positive manner. And average intelligent humanity and those approaching the probationary path and discipleship can respond to the rising sign in small measure. Maybe that's a bit of a surprise. One would think that those upon the probationary path could certainly begin to respond to the rising sign, and certainly those on the path of discipleship, but perhaps the rising sign contains spiritual potentials to which such people cannot yet fully respond. Perhaps we have to be well upon the path of discipleship to respond to the rising sign in a positive spiritual manner. Of course, there is response to the rising sign in a general and physical way, and the rising sign does have much to do with the general physical structure and health, as classical astrology tells us. So anyway, these people, the average intelligent man, the probationer, and those beginning the path of discipleship can respond to the rising sign in a small measure. This indicates the life goal for that particular life cycle, or else over a period of 7 lives. Now, there's an interesting statement and great interest here. He doesn't say that you can respond to this particular rising sign for one life or 7 lives. He talks about response over a period of 7 lives, which means that we might be able to sustain a rising sign for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 lives. The implication seems to be that after 7 lives on a particular rising sign, the rising sign would definitely have to change. But research into this matter on the basis of accurate knowledge of incarnations has to indicate what is the truth here. So this is something I'm noticing here, this over a period of. It's a very important phrase, and it doesn't necessarily mean a full 7 lives. It can be any number of lives within a possible 7. So if you have a particular rising sign, it might be interesting to know whether this is your first exposure to this sign recently as a rising sign, or whether perhaps your previous life or previous 2 lives or however many were spent upon this rising sign. And as I said in an earlier earlier webinar here, it has been theorized that when the rising sign is found in its early degrees, it may indicate early exposure to that sign. And when in later degrees, it may indicate that you've had that rising sign for a number of lives. But again, this would have to be tested and in order to be confirmed as accurate. Now let's see. It says the last 2 constitute the greater zodiac. Now, by that, perhaps he means the sun sign and the rising sign. But the planets in the houses do not constitute the greater zodiac. And of course, this term greater zodiac can be used in various ways. There are certainly stellar zodiacs consisting of 10 constellations, which in a more cosmic sense is a greater zodiac. But I think he's referring to greater and lesser zodiacs within the life of microcosmic man. So let's see if that bears up. At least we know the rising sign is included in what he's calling here the greater zodiac, and apparently the sun sign as well. The rising sign certainly is goal-oriented, and it can be drawn in such a way, I can't really do it here, but the idea is that there's an A, you know, I'm drawing it backwards because that's how it would look, an A, and kind of a line for that A, and it looks like an eye looking forward toward the future. And it is a very serious consideration for each one of us to ask, to what extent are we really spiritually living out the potentials of our rising sign and the rays coming through that rising sign? All right, he goes on to say that disciples and initiates can begin consciously to respond to all the above influence. And that's the point. I mean, response is not enough. It's got to be a knowing response, a conscious response, so you realize that to which you are responding. So the planets in the houses, and the houses can be interpreted in spiritual ways, which we can get into, respond to all the above influences, handling them constructively in terms of the soul purpose, plus those potent yet infinitely subtle forces which pour into our solar system from the three major constellations referred to above, the Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius. Of course, the word infinitely, you know, in this case it means extremely subtle forces. It is not used in a literal sense, the term infinite, but extremely subtle forces, and disciples and initiates of the third degree, initiates of the third degree particularly, can begin to respond consciously to such forces. In the early stages, the response is in the subtler bodies, and the brain, which relates to our personality consciousness in these three worlds, and the brain fails to register them. But after the third initiation, there is a recognition of them upon the physical plane. So after the third initiation, it's not just a question of responding to a ray which comes from, let us say, one of the stars of the Great Bear or one of the stars of the Pleiades, but collectively to the Great Bear as a whole, and collectively to the Pleiades. And regarding Sirius, there's a mystery there, but he definitely tells us that we're not going to be responding consciously to it until the third initiation. All right, let's go on here. Bringing the theme back to the subject of this treatise, which is that of the seven rays, how often he does remind us, I would point out that these rays have a close connection with the seven stars of the Great Bear. Close connection. Of course, it doesn't mean that the stars of the Great Bear are their ultimate source. Septonates are found on higher and higher levels throughout cosmos until we're dealing with the ultimate universal septonate of the universal logos. But as far as man is concerned, the Great Bear, the stars in the Great Bear are the source of the seven rays, especially from the will aspect. Because when we're dealing with the Great Bear, we're dealing with a great first ray constellation, which one of the theorists has called the cosmic Manu. I think it's a very good term. I would point out that these rays have a close connection with the seven stars of the Great Bear. Again, always the four and the three as a secondary differentiation. In this case, in the cup of the dipper constitutes those rays which are called rays of attribute, and the handle of the dipper constitutes those rays which are called rays of aspects, or at least is the source of. Okay, four and a secondary differentiation of three. Depending on what occult context we're dealing with, sometimes the four is above and the three below, as in the four ethers and the three dense physical planes. But sometimes the three is above and the four is below. The three, for instance, being, let us say, the threefold soul or triangle, and the four representing personality in the three vehicles, or also a concrete mind, astral body, etheric body, physical body. The four are below, or the four elements below, and the soul potencies of the seven solar systems above. Okay, so I would point out that these rays have a close connection to the Great Bear, yes, the four and the three, and to the seven sisters of the Pleiades. Of course, the Pleiades, maybe there are 1,000 Pleiades. It would be very convenient if the Pleiades as a whole turned out to be, as it were, the thousand-petaled lotus of the one about whom naught may be said. But perhaps certain of these Pleiades are more outstanding than others, the seven namely, and might be considered a kind of sevenfold jewel in the very center of the thousand-petaled lotus. That's one possible way of looking at them. Of course, these must remain speculative, but we know that jewels of the kind that are found in the center of chakras are said to be sevenfold or seven-faceted. So the seven Pleiades could be a good candidate for that type of jewel within the center of that head lotus, the thousand-petaled lotus. Certainly, I think over 800 Pleiades have already been discovered, and, you know, there are possibly that symbolic thousand we're talking about. The first constellation is the agent of positive force to the planetary logos, and the other the relayer of the negative aspects. So we have the masculine, a great bear, and the feminine, Pleiades. Negative, magnetic, receptive, etc. One having more to do with will, and the other having more to do with matter and form. There is, therefore, a direct interchange of energies between the lives of the seven planetary logoi, the major ones, I suppose, the major logoi, and the stupendous and unfathomable lives who inform these major constellations. Not just the stars in the constellations, they are stupendous indeed, but the lives that inform the entire constellation, that has to be considered. One of the stars in the great of the seven major stars of the Great Bear, each one is related to one of the sacred planets, and I think we can say also that of the seven Pleiades, we're leaving out Atlas and Pleione, the parents of the Pleiades, leaving them out and having seven, there will be one of each of them connected with one of the sacred planets. However, there are some complications there because one of the Pleiades is definitely connected to the Earth, a non-sacred planet. So the question is, to what degree do we have to include Atlas and Pleione? Because when you look at the major Pleiadian configuration, there are nine there and not seven. The two parents are involved. Okay, so there is a direct interchange of energy between the seven planetary logoi, assuming the major ones, sacred ones, and the stupendous and unfathomable lives who inform these major constellations. When you talk about informing lives, you think of a great life who is somehow ensouling all the stars within the constellation. Because the stars within a constellation and their logoi are simply chakras within a greater system. So there are stars who are to these informing lives as our planets are to our sun, the chakric relationship. Great interlocking triangles of force can be found existing between the seven planets and these two groups of seven stars each. That's very important. There is a question about evil on our planet, and it may well be that the triangle consisting of our planetary logos, one of the stars of the Great Bear and one of the stars of the Pleiades, is out of adjustment. So this has to be researched further. It will eventually be discovered that the innermost secret of astrological deduction in the planetary sense, okay, he qualifies it, because there can be other senses, the human sense, the solar sense, and so forth, is connected with these sacred triangles. And they are, in their turn, represented by the triangles shifting and changing, which can be constructed in connection with the seven centers. So let us say there are these cosmic and systemic, stemic triangles, which have a lower analogy in triangles within our etheric body. Now that really could be thought through, you know. It means that within every triangle found in the etheric body, there is somehow a correspondence to the positive force of the Great Bear, the negative receptive force of the Pleiades, and the force of a particular planet. Well, at least, so when we isolate a triangle, we have to see which aspects line up with a Great Bear star, a Pleiadian star, and a planet. I'm not prepared to do that right now, but I think it could be an interesting approach. You know, if we were to, speculatively, you know, take a triangle like the heart, throat, and solar plexus. Well, in that case, the heart would be probably the major center, the Great Bear center, one of the stars in the Great Bear. The throat would be the Pleiadian center, and perhaps the planet Mars, or I think Mars in this case, would be the chakra, the solar plexus chakra would be representing Mars in that case. It's very intricate. I'm just, as I'm thinking about it right now, which I really haven't done to any great extent before this point, I'm seeing what the intricacy possibly could be, because there are so many triangles possible. You have, for instance, a triangle for the political workers consisting of the head center, the heart center, and the base of the spine. Well, okay, are we then dealing with one of the stars in the Great Bear representing the head center, one of the stars in the Pleiades representing the heart center? Because, you know, the Pleiades are a source of cosmic buddhi. They are not just a source of intelligence. The Pleiades and these great constellations have a number of rays, just like a planet does, just like a human being does. So we can't just stick one ray upon a great source and say that's all there is. So I think it's page 1162 of Cosmic Fire, where basically he's telling us that the Pleiades do represent cosmic buddhi. Maybe I can quickly find that. It would be worth seeing. Let's see here. I think it's 1162. Yeah, here it is. Okay, the energy centers of a solar logos are themselves in the form of vast lotuses or wheels, at the center of which is hidden that central cosmic life we call the planetary logos. He is the meeting place for two types of force. Okay, now that's what we've been talking about, a planet and these two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him via the logoic lotus on the cosmic mental planes, that's the egoic lotus of the solar logos, from the seven rishis of the Great Bear on their own plane, which I think is really the cosmic atmic plane, and secondly, of Buddhic force, which is transmitted via the seven sisters or the Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon in some books, and from which has come the appellation the Dragon of Wisdom. So we see what a tremendous constellation the Dragon is, as the Pleiades are deriving cosmic buddhi from the Dragon. But anyway, the buddhic factor is related to the Pleiades, so that when in this hypothetical triangle of the head, the heart, and the base of the spine, assigning the Pleiades to the heart is not without question. And then we would have to see which of the planets should represent the base of the spine. Well, in the microcosmic system, it is Pluto. In the macrocosmic system of our solar logos, it is the Earth. And let us not forget that both Mars and Mercury have a connection with the base of the spine, with Mars representing Kundalini latent, and Mercury Kundalini active. So, you know, there are interesting triangles for each one of the seed groups. The observers of reality, the dissipators of glamour, they all have the head center. It has the head, heart, and solar plexus. I think we could make assignments there. The healing group has the head, is it the throat and the heart? I think so. We would want to go here to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, right about page 40 or so, and we would find it. right here. So, okay, there we go. Group 3, head, heart, no, Ajna Center. Okay, not correct. Ajna Center, head, heart, and Ajna Centers. And again, in this case, probably the Ajna Center will be represented by the planet, with the head and the heart representing the Graper and the Pleiades. Group number 4, head, Ajna, and throat center. That's the educators. And we would have to see, in this case, the head will always be the Great Bear, one of the stars in the Great Bear. The Ajna, in this case, will be one of the stars in the Pleiades, I suspect, and the throat center would be represented by a planet. And we just discussed group 5 of political workers, the head, the heart, and the base of the spine, and then duplicating group number 2, the head, heart, and solar plexus centers, the New World Religion group, the religious workers have the same as the observers of reality. And what is astonishing to me there is that the observers of reality do not have the solar, the Ajna center active, because of course that inner type of vision is so important, and you would think that the higher psychism via the Ajna center would be necessary. Group number 7 is the last of the groups that has only 3, and we have the head, throat, and sacral center. And the sacral center, of course, would be the planetary center, with head and throat being Great Bear and Pleiades. Well, you get a little idea of how this might be done. But there are many more triangles, and remember, as he says, the innermost secret. The innermost secret of astrological deduction, but in a planetary sense, is concerned with these sacred triangles, and they are in turn represented by the triangles within the etheric body. So we might almost say that the innermost secret of astrological deduction in the human or microcosmic sense is related to the triangles within the etheric body. That is really something to think about, because if we can locate the particular triangle which is majorly active in any one of our incarnations, we can perhaps find the representation of that triangle in our horoscope and see how adjustment can be brought about within that etheric triangle using astrological methods, offsetting, encouraging, and so forth. It is an intricate science and esoteric astrology, and I do believe that Master DK, like the Buddha, is equipped with both the second ray, obviously, because he's an expert on the seven rays, and with the third ray of astrology. Somehow he's blending these two in a very illuminating and intricate way, although he is trying for us to emphasize the main points so we don't become bewildered and lost. Okay. In casting the horoscope of the planet, which will someday be possible, and in that term someday, you know, we could be talking about ages perhaps, although those within the astrological department of hierarchy can do it right now, and DK did tell us that Libra is coming into greater power in the planetary horoscope, so he knows about this, and so do these masters of timing who are attempting to execute the divine plan according to divine timing. Okay, so in casting the horoscope of the planet, which will someday be possible, it will be found that the line of these forces and our planetary response to them is of a more potent effect than the influence of the zodiacal constellations upon the human unit. So we really have to look at these Great Bear Pleiadian planetary triangles and to see how it is that they can be of greater potency than even the zodiacal constellations. And perhaps there's a hint there that there are certain types of triangles available to the human being which will also be of greater potency than the normal zodiacal influence upon that human being. This is due to the immeasurably advanced point in evolution of the planetary spirits, these are planetary logoi, who have in their individual lives largely transcended the influence of the 12 constellations and are becoming rapidly responsive to the higher vibrations of their great prototypes, the three intimate constellations, as they have esoterically been called. But we do remember back a bit that the zodiacal constellations are very influential in the lives of the planetary logoi. Yet there is apparently a movement towards transcendence, a movement towards the three great constellations. The three great constellations. Okay. The immeasurably advanced point of the planetary spirits. Well, you know, somewhere in Cosmic Fire, it tells us that many Mahakalpas ago, the life that is now the planetary logoic life was as a master of wisdom is now. So when he talks about these lives being immeasurably advanced compared to the human being, he certainly means, at least according to the chronology we have from HBB, he means trillions and trillions of years. So we're looking for triangles, and we're looking for the connection of the Great Bear and the Pleiades in relation to each one of the planetary logoi as being eventually more influential in the lives of the planetary logoi than the 12 constellations are. Well, you can see what kind of depth of astrology would be needed to really understand this, because as we must remember, the 12 constellations are very high in the energetic constitution of the one about whom naught may be said. So we have to ask, in some way, are the Great Bear and the Pleiades even higher? Well, yes, perhaps, when we're looking at the when we're looking at the Pleiades, if it is the head center of the super cosmic logos, then as a whole it is higher than the various zodiacal petals in the heart and the head center. But, you know, we're way beyond our depth there. We just can point to some of the correlations which will have to be made. Okay, so the planetary spirits are reaching out towards the three intimate constellations. Intimate to whom? Perhaps intimate to the one about whom naught may be said. So the planetary logoi are reaching out to the three intimate constellations, and we might say intimate to the one about whom naught may be said. C and S, T, S. There is a correspondence in the lives of these great entities to the manner in which an advanced individual can offset the influence of the planets and thus so dominate his personality that prediction and certainty as to activity and circumstance are no longer possible. So the great entities here are the three intimate constellations, and when centered in them, perhaps it is no longer possible to predict exactly what will transpire upon a planet, just like the man who is centered in his higher principles can lead a life which is no longer exactly predictable, because he can offset and he can control. The soul is dominating, and the planets, per se, the planets cease to condition the life. So this is in the microcosmic sense. Suppose, after the third degree, we can focus in the energy streams of the Great Bear Pleiades, and Sirius. Then we can offset the planetary influences, if we can do that. So he's making the analogy between what a man can do and what may be possible to the higher lives. So it is with the constellations and the planetary logoi. They can offset the lower influences as they awaken to and respond to the infinitely higher vibrations of the three major constellations. So there are some lower influences in these planets, and the planetary logoi have not conquered their own nature yet. But when focusing in the three intimate constellations at their third degree, perhaps, they can offset their lower tendencies. Yes, you know, there's an analogy here. Man has to be a third degree initiate to quite powerfully offset his lower tendencies and that which is induced by the planets. And a planetary logos has to be perhaps a sacred planetary logos, or at least a planetary logos of the third degree, to begin receiving the monad-like influence of the three intimate constellations, or the great constellations. One day, I think it will be proven that it is the little bear in place of Sirius, which really is a proportional member of the triangle in which the Great Bear and the Pleiades are two members. It seems more proportionate in some respect, at least to me. So we're learning that we have to become third-degree initiates. We have to center in our higher nature. We can, even though lower influences are very strong, in this case planetary influences, offset them. All right. Now, let's see. We've been talking so much about various things, it would be good to know. Now he's going to talk about the creative hierarchies. So, undeveloped humanity is responding to the lesser zodiac. Average humanity is responding to the planets, the sun sign and the rising sign. Disciples can respond to the three great constellations. Once they've reached the third degree, remember, even the Christ is a disciple. So the term disciple is extremely plastic, protean. It can apply to many different levels. And now we come to a section of the book where he's going to begin to talk about the creative hierarchies. Well, okay, this will be a section also connecting with cosmic fire. And I don't know whether it will be possible to discuss everything here in depth about the creative hierarchies. It might be necessary to move also to what cosmic fire has to say, but at least we can have some discussion. It's a very big section. It's a section that many of us, you know, we skirt around this. We make occasional penetrations into it, speculative. We're talking about these groups of monads that are manifesting through forms. And these forms are found at different levels. So he's going to give us a chart here, or a tabulation, and that chart will be one with which we are quite familiar. This is the chart. Now, it's also good for us, I think, to let's see if we can find in this table of creative hierarchies. The previous one is also important. This is a table of creative hierarchies who are liberated or almost liberated onto the cosmic astral plane. And then the next one is a groupings of monads that can be very high, but they are still not liberated onto the cosmic astral plane. They are hierarchies in manifestation on the cosmic physical plane. So we will be referring to these charts. And as I said, we can point in the direction of some solutions, but really there are so many intricacies here that I suspect much will necessarily remain unascertained or not ascertainable. Okay, the Tibetan says, it might be appropriate if I interpolated a chart or a tabulation which may be found suggestive of some of these interlocking energies which play through, traverse, return, stimulate and energize every part of the solar system. So we're dealing with creative hierarchies as they exist within our solar system. They are stimulated by, especially by the second tier of petals in the 21-fold egoic lotus of the solar logos. It doesn't mean that this is necessarily their point of origin, but it is a high point of stimulation for these creative hierarchies, which I think we should consider as collections of monads expressing on a particular plane through particular types of vehicles. Now, the vehicles themselves may be the vehicle of expression for still other monads of lower development. Okay, energies. They only evoke conscious response where the vehicle of expression and of response is adequate to the impact. That is the ongoing principle. We are in a veritable ocean of energies of all types, some extremely refined and some more gross, I suppose we would say. But we will not register this multitude of energies unless we have the kind of vehicle that is in a state of sufficient refinement thus to register. So they only evoke conscious response. Now, they might evoke response. In other words, unconscious to ourselves, we are responding to all kinds of things, all kinds of energies, of which we know nothing. But are we aware that we are responding? This is the question. And this statement is true of the solar logos, the planetary logoi, and of all forms in all the kingdoms of our planet. So he's basically telling us that even the solar logos or planetary logos are unaware of many types of very high energies from transcendent sources. Remember, even our solar logos can be considered as a crystal compared to some of the great lives, and I wouldn't be surprised if our solar logos might not be considered even as an atom or even as a subatomic particle to some of the greatest lives in the universe. Yes, he does say, as I just said here, unconscious reaction will, of course, exist. We respond to all kinds of energies but don't know it. The master may see it, however. But it will be on a general and mass scale, affecting, I suppose, the aggregation we call the kingdom of humanity, or maybe the on a still higher level, the fourth creative hierarchy. And much of it pours through to us from these distant constellations via the fifth creative hierarchy. This is very important because this is, in some respects, a higher prototype of the tenth creative hierarchy, which is also called the fifth manifested hierarchy. So this is the higher prototype of the solar angels. The fifth creative hierarchy, fifth manifested creative hierarchy, is called the hierarchy of solar angels, and this is the fifth almost liberated hierarchy, almost onto the cosmic astral plane. It is ruled by Neptune, just the way the solar angels are ruled by Venus, and we know that if this fifth almost liberated hierarchy is the higher correspondence to the fifth manifested hierarchy, it makes sense that Neptune rules it as the higher octave of Venus, which rules the fifth manifested creative hierarchy. This hierarchy being on the verge of liberation, you know, it says veiling the Christ. It's an interesting hierarchy that is veiling the Christ here. It's almost as if the Christ on our own microcosmic level is on the verge of liberation. We know he is a seventh degree initiate almost. Perhaps some of these higher initiations are done in phases. So he began taking the seventh degree back in Palestinian days and perhaps took another part of it in 1943, when a great tide of love reached a kind of apotheosis at the Gemini full moon of that year, and then later, I suspect, we'll take a third phase of the seventh initiation. But it could be said that the Christ is almost on the verge of liberation, perhaps with respect to the cosmic astral plane, with respect to the possibility not only of responding to the cosmic astral plane, but of actually perhaps focusing in some way on the cosmic astral plane. Whether the ninth initiation is needed for that, I don't know. It may be that one can focus on the cosmic astral plane even before the ninth initiation, but still has relationship with the cosmic physical plane. Whereas the ninth degree initiate, we are told, refuses, that's the name of the initiation, refusal, refuses to have relationship with the cosmic physical plane. So, you know, we're going to get it. See, here's the thing for us to realize. After page 100 or 120, somewhere in there, the book almost becomes easier in a way. DK is laying out some great cosmological principles here, and also some foundational matters in relation to the essence of astrology. These things are difficult for us to comprehend. Once he starts talking about the signs, the rulers, the relationship, the whole matter is somewhat more concrete and more familiar to us, because many of us have been involved in astrology for quite a while, and we're familiar with these factors that will be discussed after 100 pages or so. But we're not so familiar with these foundational perspectives which lie at the root of all of esoteric astrology. They are cosmological as well, and so they are abstract, and we have to do our best to fathom them to the degree possible. Anyway, this fifth hierarchy, being on the verge of liberation, is to be found on the intellectual level of consciousness. Now, intellectual, you see, the number five has to do with the intellect. The five has to do with the intellect. And, you know, intellectual, it's not necessarily concrete-minded at all. Sometimes the word intellect, as used by the Neoplatonic philosophers, indicates a penetration into the intuition. So let's follow to see what he says. Is to be found on the intellectual level of consciousness. I guess it will necessarily have a connection with the cosmic mental plane. If the Buddha, who is still in a way a member, well, is he really? He began that way. He was a member of the fourth creative hierarchy. So in a way, a human monad. If he can contact the cosmic mental plane in that flashing initiation of the sixth degree, which I believe he did take, then certainly hierarchies, members of hierarchies higher than the fourth creative hierarchy, can contact cosmic planes. And this is the fifth, and the cosmic mental plane is the fifth, so that could be considered, in a cosmic sense, the intellectual level of consciousness. So anyway, this hierarchy on the verge of liberation is to be found on the intellectual level of consciousness and can, therefore, be used as a focal point and a transmitter of the higher energies to our solar system and to the planet. Well, on our planet, at least, we are not really entirely soul conscious. Our planetary logos has not yet taken his second cosmic initiation. He's not yet a cosmic initiate of the second degree. So then, is he truly illumined in the planetary cosmic sense? Anyway, higher energies can be transmitted into our solar system and into our planet by these beings in the almost liberated hierarchy, who are touching, obviously, cosmic planes, and in this case, the intellectual plane. If you make a careful study of the chart of the 12 creative hierarchies, page 34, you will note that this hierarchy is influencing and influenced by the seventh ray of magical order and ceremonial organization. That's actually, it's a different way of talking about the ray, isn't it? We usually hear about the ray of ceremonial magic and order. But this is magical order, a special type of order, which allows the bringing down of the high so it meets the low, and of ceremonial organization, and not just ceremonial magic. So there's a different angle on this. Now, what he wants us to take a look at is this table on page 34. And we notice that the seventh ray is very powerful here, the sign Cancer with two R's, okay? All right, the sign Cancer is very powerful. It's a manifesting sign which brings in, at this time, the third and the seventh rays. And the energy is of mass life, but perhaps all of the energies on the cosmic physical plane that are being fed by this particular almost liberated hierarchy are, from the cosmic perspective, mass life. This particular hierarchy veils the Christ, but what do we mean? I don't think we mean that it veils the Lord Maitreya. I think it veils a kind of a universal Christ, and by that we mean the Divine Son, S-O-N, or the Christ aspect of the soul aspect of the solar logos found on the intellectual cosmic mental plane, veiling the Christ. And its numbers are 5 and 8, particularly. Those are, from a certain angle, Mercurian numbers. The number 8 is, of course, a Christ number, but a Mercurian number as well. And the number 5 suggests the mental plane and the higher mental plane and solar angelic activity. There is a triangle given in esoteric astrology. Well, let's see, so there's Great Bear, Aries, Pluto. That's the first ray. Then there's Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. That's the secondary triangle. And then there's this triangle, Pleiades, Cancer, Venus. I believe that's how it goes. And we can see this Pleiades, Cancer, Venus triangle related to this fifth almost liberated creative hierarchy. I mean, depth after depth could open up if we could study this in the right way. The basic function of this ray, the seventh ray, is to relate spirit and matter and produce the manifested form. So we can see that this particular fifth creative hierarchy is very important in producing manifested forms on the cosmic physical plane. It has a manifesting power, and it is almost to be found on the seventh level of the cosmic astral plane, where there is the kind of cosmic desire incentive which will precipitate onto the cosmic physical plane. The sign of the zodiac with which it is closely related is that of Cancer, as we have seen, and the crab, Cancer the crab, which is a mass sign and is one of the gates into manifested life. Well, in this case, you know, we're not talking about simply human incarnation. We are talking about a gate onto the cosmic physical plane, and perhaps out of the cosmic physical plane. So, you know, we human beings are barely familiar with anything that lies above and beyond the three worlds. We are just making our way into the higher mental plane and slightly into the spiritual triad. And yet these are worlds of form. The cosmic physical plane is a world of cosmic form, and the kinds of forms that appear may be quite related to the precipitating seventh ray Cancerian precipitating power of this fifth almost liberated creative hierarchy. A lot of talking today, you know. When I can, I try to talk these webinars through, because it's not always that a day easily appears when it is possible. Today it has been somewhat possible. Anyway, this fifth creative hierarchy is a gate, certainly into manifested life, and to a degree out of manifested life onto the cosmic astral plane, which is ruled by a higher correspondence of the Lord Varuna and is certainly conditioned by Neptune. You know, if you look at Neptune, it has that kind of up and out energy direction. And so although we usually think about Capricorn as the gate into higher life, this Cancerian hierarchy can be kind of a two-way gate, and it's in a pivotal position, still apparently connected with the cosmic physical plane, but having sort of one claw in the cosmic astral plane as well. It's not fully liberated. So if it's not fully liberated, one then must question whether the members of this particular group have taken the ninth initiation, which liberates lives entirely from the cosmic physical plane. Anyway, that is a question. The following information anent the hierarchies may prove useful. It has been gathered from various sources. Now let's see. The following information anent the hierarchies. Let's see exactly where this goes in the book, because we want to see whether we should be looking at these hierarchies. This is an esoteric psychology, and I'll put this in, and there's no, the following information, let's see, the following information, no, that's not it either. That's discipleship in the New Age. Ah, because that's checked. That's the problem. Okay. The following information anent the hierarchies. So let's go back here and see if we can find this. Well, I think what we're going to have to do is just go to esoteric. That was esoteric healing I checked. No wonder it's not going to work. All right. Let's see if this will work. Yes, we're going to have one. All right. And then on page 34 and 35 come the tabulations, especially. Whoa, I'm over my limit. Oh, good place to stop. I didn't realize I had gone that far. All right, well, then let us put our marker here, right at this point. And we will carry on. This is EEA, Esoteric Astrology, EAA, Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 14. And today is still the 28th of June here in Europe. We will carry on with number 15. But now we will say together the Great Invocation. And I think the best way to do that is simply to look here from the point of light. Okay, let's uncheck this. I'm running into a little bit of difficulty here. From the point of light within. I know all of you know this, or most of you know it, but we'll say it anyway, with the script. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Okay, friends. Thank you for attending. I'll try to get this out to you as soon as I can. It may be a little delayed because we're trying to take 11, Adventure 11 and part of 12, truncated 12, and make it usable for Mac users because it was precipitously cut off, as I told you, due to a certain webinar protocol. So we will see you, and we will go into this matter of the creative hierarchies. It's a great adventure about which nothing entirely definitive can be said by the likes of us, but we will try to explore the possibilities. So we'll see you on the next occasion, and thank you for listening and thinking together so that we can create this view of our solar system, our planet, our solar system, and our local cosmos, which will contribute to our illumination and our usefulness to the hierarchy on this planet. We'll see you now.